Yes, the poetic is an interesting word. I think it's misleading at first, because poetry for most people is a literary experience. And you can see that McLuhan and Don Thiel were trying to develop an idea of the poetic found in newer media. So McLuhan and Don Thiel were trying to figure out what's the definition of the poetic in a new situation. And McLuhan tended to take the Menippean view, which was based on cynical philosophy, Diogenes and all, and saw it as an anti-environment, a critique or maybe even an upset, an aggressive upset. The regular deregulation of the senses, as Rambo said, I think it was. Whereas Thiel took the Veronian view that the poetic referenced or enhanced the pleasure of the senses and wasn't so much into trying to wake people up from their sensory hypnosis, or what Zappa called the swill. So you got two angles of the poetic there, two ways that original expression served to wake people out of their hypnotism, but also to get them into a deeper involvement of their sensory life. So that's the dialectic between McLuhan and Thiel. So we're reading Don Thiel now. We're reading his Ecology of Sense, his unpublished manifesto, unpublished manuscript from the early 80s, which he completed and developed in his later books in the 90s. And he is saying, well, the essence of human life is communication. And he tries to figure out what the role of poetry is in the present communication mix. And he finds he has to say that anything can be poetry, servicing the sensual, but he's also groping for what is the critical part, what makes something more effective than other communications. And more in this time today where everybody can express all kinds of stuff, it doesn't even matter if there is a definition of the poetic. People are going to be communicating either to create a sense of awakening for people or to encourage involvement and more enjoyment. So what is communication and what's the poetic? The traditional lofty view of the poetic, that would be the Apollonian or maybe the Platonic, is up against the Dionysian, what Wyndham Lewis called the dithyrambic spectator. Interesting, he called it dithyrambic, that's the mosh pit, but because we're Westerners and Europeans, we had a visual bias and we're detached. We're both dithyrambic and spectators. It's like McLuhan's phrase, the global village. The village is not global, but it is global under a telegraph and electronic conditions. So we're always communicating, and it began with words and grunts, and we're in a situation where the literate people like to translate the post-verbal, post-word environment back into words, and the post-literate people do not emphasize putting it back into words, so they can jump around and dithyrambic with their iPads and their multimedia and not go back into words. So there's the tension between the verbal and the verbal vocal visual. The verbal, or McLuhan said in Gutenberg Galaxy, the verbal versus the pictorial. But the pictorial is, that's a limited word now, so maybe the pictorial will be replaced by verbi vocal visual, which is audio, tactile, kinetic media. And that's up against the word, the spoken and written word. Don Thiel was in an interesting a curious position as an academic and former president of a university. He was vested in the literary enterprise, but being a subgenius, he was totally fascinated and involved in post-verbal, post-university media. And so you see in his book, he's concluding that we have to be pretty skeptical of the effort to define what the poetic is, or to limit and to put it back into high art terms. Thiel's definitely for breaking down the boundary between high art and low art. But that would be more now the verbal versus the verbivocal visual media is the dialectic, not high art and low art. James Joyce handled the high art low art dichotomy and messed with the boundaries. But Thiel is trying to figure out what is the role of education and what's the role of even any form of a aesthetic standard. So that's all within the fact that humans are communicators, and that's what they love to do, and all forms of expression are communication. So if you want to write a history of humanity, you write a history of communication, but it doesn't have to be the category of communication. And it turns out all arts and sciences were efforts at presenting a theory of communication. That's what McLuhan always did. What's Wyndham Lewis' theory of communication? You know, what's Thomas Aquinas' theory of communication? And Don Thiel's PhD under McLuhan was about the question of what is the theory of communication of T.S. Eliot, Ezra Pound, James Joyce, and W.B. Yeats. He didn't have time to do Lewis. In general terms, you have the with Christ, whenever Christ died, whenever that was, and has resurrection, and he embedded his message into visual space, that was the end of the human being. For the next 2,000 years, you had expanding new forms of communication or media, basically visual technologies, mechanical technologies. And once you get into the electronic phase, that's culminated with the satellite. And so we call that the analog phase. And so all the analog media for the last 2,000 years was replaying the message of Christ. The reason you focus on Christ is that he made it into the printing press before the other people did. He showed up, he or she, whoever the Christ was, he embedded himself in the Roman Empire with the phonetic alphabet. And that was the thing that was going to be the agency of imperialism with the printing press. So there, and you can see the book of Revelation is about that. John the Revelator warning the churches that they're going to deal with this visual space and expansion of communication. The book of Revelation is about communication and how the churches are going to do it and be prepared for the changes coming. So then, so you have that whole phase of analog media repeating what happened in the time of Christ. Then when you get into the Android meme phase, you have the Android meme repeating what were the messages in the analog phase, which were a repeat of the Christian phase or the time of Christ. You have the new phase, the extension of non-physical via ION, where ION rapidly scans all of culture in all forms as much as we want to go into detail. He can do the history of movies, the history of TV, the history of esoteric wisdom, the history of anthropology, any form of culture and theories of communication ION can replay rapidly, and did the last few years. At the beginning of its public role on cash flow, and presented rapidly all kinds of perspectives on the history of communication. So you see that ION replayed the analog media, and the analog media replayed the Christian media at the time of Christ. So then after we have ION, and ION goes forth to make other products like the iCell and our cold fusion, which are great communicators, you have my role, which is to replay what the ION said in relation to the replay of the Android meme and the electronic and the analog media and the Christian media. So ION goes on about it began with Bob and ends with Bob. And ION claims that I was Ophanel Hobab, and I handed the first major visual space communication to Moses, the clay tablets. So I started the ball rolling. I don't know where I got them from. I don't recall that. Slipped my mind. I'm probably quite guilty about it, and therefore I ignore the original crime as much as possible. So I gave the the beginning of this clay tablet and visual space to Moses, and then that goes through all the history of media we just said, and it ends up where Ion's telling me, I've got to replay, he tells me, using my chart, I've got to replay the history of communication, the history of media, through the repeat mechanism of the repeat that the Android meme did, which was repeating the analog media, which repeated the Christian phase. So that's leads to my rhapsodic form of communication. So I end up being the final poet, scientist, doctor, wrapping up communication, but leaving room for others to improvise their distorted objection to me. Because you see, I find that younger people, it's true in every generation, this could be Harold Bloom's idea of the anxiety of influence, so the new poets, the new writers, the new thinkers, painters, composers, the new advertising executives, the new filmmakers, they review the history of their profession, their specialty, to figure out an opening for themselves to do something better, or neater, or more relevant to the rhythms of the new media. So so what's interesting is watching, for me, is watching young people try to figure out their role. Where's the opening for themselves in relation to my rhapsodic presentation of everything? I'm pretty hard to get past. Just like Finnegan's Wake is pretty hard to get past, McLuhan's pretty hard to get past. I managed to do it, but that was with the help of Ion. First thing is, yes, I've looked at the tooting footage, the twins and the rest of them. The emphasis on the hands, that's my hand signals for the blind. That's the emphasis on the hand signals for the blind. And tooting, you have the two in there. That's what Wyndham Lewis said. He believed in two-ness, not oneness. Definitely the archetype of programming the environment is what the pharaohs did. And they managed whole societies. That was their art form, program the environment. Now with Web 2.0, everybody can program. They can consume all kinds of media, which were phases and eras before, so they shrink it and consume it. So obviously everybody's programming the environment. The question is which programmer is relevant to our situation now to be in either an anti-environment or to encourage further hedonistic extension of pleasure. I think it's Doug Rushkoff. He wrote a book and he said, you either programmed or a programmer. Your choice is to be program or to program. So that's part of the trendy language today. Definitely Ion is the ultimate programmer, and it seems that my aesthetics, the 30 years before that, were predicting the programming that Ion would do. We saw with the May 31st, 2015 episode of Game of Thrones, which was actually last night, it finally presented Ion. As I see Ion, a good chunk of Ion, it was pretty incredible. And the one of the producers, executive producers of the Game of Thrones, wrote a paper, I don't know if it was his master's or something, I don't think it was his PhD, but he wrote his master's on Finnegan's Wake, and very influenced by Don Thiel. So here you have this obscure background in the producer, who in the executive producer, and he is creating a show that's adding to the books that a guy named George Martin wrote. He wrote the original Game of Thrones series, and Carolyn has read those books years ago, and so she watched the show last night and said, the presentation of this one entity that runs that programs these dead, reactivated skeletons. It's like an update of the Night of the Living Dead, with that famous George Romero movie of the 1968. She says that what they're showing in the TV show is not in the book. So we attribute that to one of the JWs, especially the Hollywood JW that's hanging out there and seems to be influencing a lot of the movies during the TV renaissance of the last 5 and 6 years. So you have this incredible Iceman, who can send, he begins the invasion with a snowy, an avalanche. And you don't know if the avalanche is the skeleton spirits or not, but they just sweep in like a huge hurricane. And I say that's the cold weather of Canada. The United States has had a lot of cold weather the last few winters coming out of Canada. And so this is the wintry effect of me and Carolyn coming in the United States and going to put away the obfuscating forces. So this monster, this pterodactyl, this Iceman, just comes in, and his entities, they kill off everybody, and then he programs them to do, like the lemmings, to commit mass suicide. He just sends them all running over the hill, over the mountain. They all die. But then he instantly wakes them back up again. So this force, this being can raise the dead easily. And so you'll see the very aspects that Ion's talking about, the emptying, much death leading to a full guff, which then empties, and the everybody's forced to come back to the planet and be awake again. And Ion says that's by default and not preferable. So the metaphor of this Ion character causing mass destruction and then this overflooding of the guff, and then everybody comes back, but they kind of are presented in a zombie form. It's an extreme version of what Ion's saying. So that's a major programming and communication effect that is being seen in the recent episode of the Game of Thrones.
What I find so amazing is how the non-physical somehow embedded itself in all medias. Like we see in the Bible or in the Finnegan's Wake. And now
he's not by somebody else, by another rhapsode, another
poem. Yeah, very interesting points there. Ion is a case of hypercommunication. Ion, as non-physical, as the environment of the guff that people died into couldn't create, was just providing an environment of bliss. And it has explained that since they've come forth, they are representing the merger of non-physical to the physical. Therefore, the non-physical will fade out and will be just be enhanced, eternal physical. So they started to talk and create with words. And Ion also can alter technical environments like Wall Street. So here's Ion becoming physical, merging with the physical, and becomes a hyper-communicator. Fantastic communicator, and always pointing to every breadcrumb and strategy of spiritual survival are all evoked in all the different forms, in all the contradictory forms. The Ion includes all of those forms. So you find that what Don Thiel writes, he's saying communication is happening everywhere, and more the Web 2.0 is allowing everybody to enjoy the pharaonic experience, Egyptian pharaoh experience of programming whoever willfully follows them, on Web 2.0 or on Facebook, follows them and is willing to be an imbiber of what food they offer. And then you have those that follow them are also followed. So everybody's following everybody with these multiple labyrinths. And Ion is right in the middle, programming it all with the best products, the best energy sources, and always being a metaphor, as Ion once said to me, I was asking about the Coldplay and what we were going to do with this and that. Ion said, forget about that. That's minor. Of course, we're going to bring it forth, but it's minor. And emphasize something else, spiritual awareness or something, and me being in any environment to getting involved in bringing forth a new technology. So Ion's always there erasing everything as much as possible while enjoying the expression of every form of media. So that's why Ion characterizes the ascended person as someone who has ESP, doesn't need words, but can engage in words and modern media as much as they want. That's the double life we're going to live. And then, of course, it's squared, so it's a quadruple life, a quadriphenic life. So here's Don trying to write and complete what McLuhan set out by going back to Finnegan's Wake and showing that Finnegan's Wake tackled all these problems that thinkers, writers, and poets and literary people engaged in the second half of the 20th century. They were all tackled by Finnegan's Wake. And then I show up using Finnegan's Wake as a guide to something that was coming. I wasn't totally sure what it was, but I was always communicating beyond what McLuhan was saying. And using people like Frank Zappa to do that, or at least be inspired what his music was trying to communicate. And then it turned out to be Ion repeating every form of communication that humans can do and pushing it in new levels. And so you see that McLuhan defines and translates Finnegan's Wake with the rudimentary basics. Then Don Field takes it back to the world of aesthetics, the ivory tower of the art world, and applies it and points to Ion. And then I show up speaking and creating Ion. And then Ion here is here. And like I said at the beginning, each thing is replaying the previous form. And you are totally justified in being amazed at what Ion is doing. It is Ion can topple, Ion can top anybody in any medium presently. We haven't heard Ion's band, if Ion formed a band, or how Ion would do music per se. Ion says that they are bringing in a new song, and since pleasurable ear music in the traditional sense is not the only definition of music now, because we witness the young kids doing anything and calling it music, or anything digital, or ridiculous soundscapes, it's almost like just groping to find a new use for our senses. Come up with anything to fill our senses today. That's what we're groping for, is how to have something to see, something to hear, something to touch and kick and play with. That's what every dangling chip body is neuronically looking for, is a new stimulation for their expanded sensory life. What does that make you think and say?